All right, sorry about the delay. Welcome to another episode of The Stoop, Monday evening. Jeff the Shark Perini here introducing us. Jonathan Ragus is going to be along any moment. A little technical difficulty tonight, but we're here for another big Monday show. And we've got a great show for you tonight. We're going to have from House of Pain, Danny Boy O'Connor. He's going to be joining us tonight. Not only to talk about House of Pain, he's going to talk about his new project, The Outsider's House, from the movie The Outsiders. In Tulsa, Oklahoma, as they're attempting to restore it and save it and preserve it. That's some of the things that Danny's going to be talking about with us tonight here on the show. Also, a little recap of some playoffs, NHL and NBA playoffs, and stuff from the world around us, current events, and all that good stuff. Once again, Jeff Perini, a little technical difficulty. We do apologize, and we'll be getting to you with the full show any moment. And I think John is on his way in, perhaps. Okay. All right, so we're going to go anyway. It is a big Monday. Welcome again here to The Stoop, Block Talk Radio, one of the big shows. We've had some good shows in the past. We thank everybody that joins us here. We're doing music. We're doing a lot of music. We're going to announce some more big guests are coming up in the near future tonight. And one of those, of course, coming up in a couple weeks, and this is for my Philly people out there, from the band Candlebox, their new guitarist, Brian Quinn. Brian will be with us on May 16th. A lot of Philly people might know him from his days at Octane and Foster Child, and he's now touring with Candlebox, legendary band. So if you know them and know him, tune in, give Brian a listen. We're also working with some other talents from the music world, and as always, I get some actors, actresses, all that good stoop right here for you on The Stoop. So let's take a moment. We're waiting for John to get in here, and like I said, we'll be with Danny Boy a little bit later. Tonight's show is going to have some good stuff. We're going to do a top five list of the top five party songs. That's right, party songs, stuff to get you up, stuff to get you dancing and moving. That's going to be our top five list. Going to take a brief moment right now while I wait for John. I'm going to go on about the NFL draft, which was this past week. And for some fans of football, some big ones. And if you're an Eagles fan, you know, really huge. Number two pick overall, they took quarterback Carson Wentz. Something I'm very excited about. I got a new Philly quarterback starting things new off here. Sounds very exciting. Of course, everybody got on Dallas. They took Ezekiel Elliott. Elliott showed up in kind of a tuxedo with a half shirt. Don't really know what that half shirt thing was all about. But, hey, God bless him. Whatever he likes. And he's got an opportunity to be good real there in Dallas. So, good draft this year. A lot of talent, a lot of names, a lot of controversy, as always. And that's what the NFL draft is all about. It's always a little something, always about, you know, but it's young guys, man. They're guys in their early 20s. They're just out of college. So they're college kids, man. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to do things. They're going to party. They're going to have some fun. And I know that you got to curb that for the NFL. Hopefully, you know, these guys get it back in order and realize what kind of opportunity lies ahead of them. Also, some more playoffs. Again, there's no NHL and NBA playoffs. John got the best of me yesterday. The Toronto Raptors moved on. Took Game 7. So my Indiana Pacers did not succeed as I'd hoped. Same thing with my Charlotte Hornets. Hornets took the Miami Heat till 7, and Miami hung on there. So I'm trailing. I'm trailing John by a good deal. And he knows he's a basketball guy. He knows his basketball stuff. I had no chance there whatsoever. But we give it all. That's what we do here. We have some fun. We prognosticate, if you will. And I'll get him. Another round's coming up, and I still got him in hockey. We're neck and neck. So he gets here, he will know. Again, going to talk about lots of stuff here tonight. We're going to talk some sports. We're going to talk some music. We're going to talk some movies. We're going to talk to Danny Boy O'Connor coming up at 8 o'clock. Should be great having him on, and very curious to hear about this project, the Outsider South, as I said, and just Danny and what he's been doing, and of course, House of Pain, and everybody knows Jump Around, one of the top songs to get you up out of your seats, speaking of which, and so that's going to be big. We're going to have that here for you tonight. I want to thank some of our previous guests that we have had here in the last few weeks. A couple of them are making big strides, and we talk to I think we got John.
Yo, it is me. I am here.
All right, you got me?
Yeah, I got you. Fun times here at the Stoop as our main server just went kablooey. Fun times. Very sorry about that. Unfortunately, sometimes we have these little technical difficulties here. Thanks to Jeff for holding down the fort for the last couple of minutes of the show.
I think we lost a lot of listeners, but
No, we're still getting them in. They did listen. It happens, you know, with internet-based radio shows. You know, things just happen, and unfortunately, it always happens to us lately. I don't understand it. I don't get it, man. I really don't.
We're the working man. We work so hard, and we're out there grinding during the day, and we grind during the night here, and not the time of the day.
Oh man, it can only get better from here, right? So. Well, real quick, I don't know what Jeff, what have you spoke about in the last 7 minutes?
I mentioned our upcoming guest, Brian Quinn from Candlebox. A couple of Philly people, as I said, might know him from his days at Octane and Foster Child. He's now with Candlebox. He's going to be joining us in 2 weeks to talk about their new album. Mentioned how we have Danny Boy O'Connor here tonight. He's going to be talking a little bit about The Outsider's House and some House of Pain. Listen, we've got the top five list, top five party songs. You can tell we're partying here. can't get it quite straight, so we're a little too much partying. But that's where we're at. Feel free to jump in.
Absolutely. All right, man. Well, first off, as Jeff said, Danny Boy O'Connor from the iconic hip-hop group House of Pain will be here tonight. We're not going to really talk about music. We're going to talk about his plans and his vision to restore the Curtis Brothers home in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is a part of the Outsiders movie. It's the house where C. Thomas Howell, Rob Lowe, and the late, great Patrick Swayze lived in. We're going to talk to him about that. We're going to talk to him about the GoFundMe campaign and how you can contribute if you're a big fan of not only the movie, but the amazing S.C. Hinton book, which we all... Honestly, I never met a person who hasn't read it and who hasn't loved it, so it's going to be cool to talk to Danny Boy about that in just a little bit. Want to thank Sagan Amory from Caveat for joining us last week. That was a fun show. She's a really cool person, and we hope to have her here in the future. So as we said, top five list. We'll get right into it since we'll be joined by Danny Boy in the next 20 minutes or so. And it's our top five favorite party songs because you know why? Danny Boy, House of Pain, Jump Around. When that plays, gets the party going. So in honor of Danny Boy's amazing iconic hip-hop group, House of Pain, we're going to do our top five favorite party songs. So, Jeff, hit it off, my friend.
All right, I've got the got a couple famous ties. We've got a big list here tonight. This was a tough list. It's something we kind of threw together, and I said, wow, it's harder than you think.
Yes.
So number five, and not just because he's on the show, but number five because it's classic, House of Pain's Jump Around. Every time you hear it, you do it. You do the hop. You got your hand in the air. You're hopping up and down. You're jumping around. Everybody knows it. It's such a great number five. Tie with number five is The Kingsmen with Louie. A lot of people may not know all the lyrics. It's kind of a muffled song, but it's fun, man, to hear that. And the big yells come out, and everybody gets on the floor. And Louie tied.
Great song, man. Great song.
Love that song. Number four. If you're at a party with the pretty girls and you want to get the pretty girls up and dancing, Van Morrison's Brown Eyed Girl. It screeches, man. All the girls just, and they just charge the dance floor with Brown Eyed Girl. It's a classic. It's a great number. It's smooth and soft, little guitar, and I don't think he really had that in mind when he made it, but it's become a huge party hit.
Absolutely.
Number three for me, one of my favorites, and I dance, which is scary. Montel Jordan, This Is How We Do It. That opening note, as soon as you hear it, and as soon as you hear Montel just say that lyric, This Is How We Do It, everybody's doing it, man. You're ready, and you're up, and you're jumping.
Absolutely.
A tie for second place.
Whoa.
Two superstars. Yeah, tie for second place. Two songs very similar, but iconic in partying. Cool in the Gang's Celebration. The words in it right there. There's a party going on. Let's celebrate. And everybody dances, man. And I seen them live in concert and open for Van Halen. That song gets you up. No matter what you're doing, you're getting up for it. And a tie for number two, one that me and my friends always get down to, and it's a little corny, but it's always fun. Lionel Richie's All Night Long. Everybody
great
does
songs.
It, man. Everybody sings all night. And they do the echo all night. Everybody does it, man. It's great. And they try to do the that little lyric that nobody understands what Lionel's saying, but that's it, number two. Number one.
Before you do number one, if you do what I think you're going to do, I'm going to slap you, so go ahead and announce it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not going to do it. No graphics, no jumping around. Number one is the Isley Brothers and Shout.
Oh, thank God.
A little bit louder now, a little bit softer now. People go down to the floor. People jump up to the sky. Everybody sings Shout. Everybody jumps when they hear Shout. Greatest party song to me. It wasn't even close. I know I had Ties at 2 and Tie at 5, but the distance between number one and number two, miles. Shout just blows it away, man, for me.
Nice. Love the list, man. Well, I got two ties as well, man, because this was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. We spoke about that just a little bit earlier, but I'm going to jump into mine. Have a tie at number five. First, Dancing With Myself by the great Billy Idol. This is one of those songs that when it hits, everybody just hits the dance floor. Number five, as well as a tie, Footloose, Kenny Loggins, man. This is a song where when it hits, man, I pretend I'm Kevin Bacon, man. I pretend the glitter's falling from the ceiling, man. And I say, everybody, let's dance! But, I'm not Kevin Bacon. I don't dance like him, so it is what it is. Number four, got to go to a little hip-hop, The Humpty Dance, man, Digital Underground. When that hits, man, I love The Humpty Dance. I love Digital Underground. I've always been big fans of them. Number three, not only just in honor of our guest tonight, but I'm such a huge House of Pain fan. From their self-titled 92 album, House of Pain, to Same As It Ever Was, The Truth Crushed to Earth Shall Rise Again, just a huge House of Pain fan, Jump Around, man. When that song hits, man, I don't think there's nobody in the world that knows Jump Around by House of Pain, man. It really took on a life of its own over the years, and it's still going strong today. Absolutely amazing song. Number two, Apache, Sugar Hill Gang.
Wow.
Hits, man. Boom. Everybody's dancing, including the old people, man, and they know it. They know the dance, man, which is absolutely hilarious, man. Something that was pretty much brought to fame by Will Smith and Alfonso Ribeiro in an episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and that's when it started coming out again and really taking on a life of its own.
I do it all the time. I do that dance all the time.
Oh, man, we did it at my wedding, man. We did it at my wedding. Everybody was dancing, man. We have it on video. It's absolutely phenomenal. Maybe I take a snippet of that and we'll put it up on our new webpage when we launch it. Tie at number one, man. This was rough. This was really, really rough. First, 1999 by Prince. I know it's not 1999 anymore, but when that song came out, up into 2000, man, when we broke into Y2K, song was hot. And I hate to say it, but the song is still hot now. It's just an absolutely phenomenal song by the late, great Prince. And number one, tied with him, also a late, great artist, lost him this year, Let's Dance by David Bowie. Just another song that gets people pumped, man.
Okay.
It gets people jumping and dancing, and it's just a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal song. So that's where I'm going to go on my list. So let's recap real quick. Jeff's top five, tied at number five, Louie Louie by The Kingsmen, Jump Around by House of Pain. Number four, Brown Eyed Girl by Van Morrison. Three, This Is How We Do It, Montel Jordan. Another tie at two, Celebration by Kool & the Gang and All Night Long by Lionel Richie. Number one, Shout by the awesome Isley Brothers. Mine, tie at number five, Dancing With Myself, Billy Idol, Footloose, Kenny Loggins. Four, The Humpty Dance, Digital Underground. Three, Jump Around, House of Pain. Two, Apache, Sugar Hill Gang. And a tie at the top spot, 1999 by the late, great Prince and Let's Dance by the late, great David Bowie. It was a lot harder, man, than I thought it would be.
I tell you what, when I looked at my top 10, top 15, your songs, your list was my list. Every song that you had was probably 6 through 10 for me, or 7 through 11, whatever, with the ties. There's some Beyonce stuff, Crazy in Love, and Put a Ring on It, and there's songs to get people moving. It was tough when we talked about what to do.
Listen, man, I know it gets people moving, but is that your favorite party song? That's the thing, man.
Actually, I hate to say it, but Crazy in Love gets me dancing a little bit, man. I know it sounds weird, but I can't do the Beyonce butt bump, but,
I hope not.
Not like her. Nobody can like her. Maybe Shakira, that's about it.
Oh, nobody can do it like Shakira, man. Those hips don't lie, dude.
Amen to that.
All right, man, let's get into a few points of discussion before we're joined by our guest, Danny Boy O'Connor. news comes out today that Scott Stapp, former frontman of Creed, is hinting that he will be the newest lead singer of Stone Temple Pilots. When asked, he said he cannot either confirm or deny the rumor. I'll throw this out at you first. I've always been a fan of Creed. Love Mark Tremonti. Love Scott Stapp's voice. When the first album hit, My Own Prison, absolutely phenomenal. The second album, good. Third album, good. And it took a tailwind from there. I like Scott Stapp. Love that he went to couples therapy with his wife. Love that he cleaned up. He's sober. He's doing good. He just came off of a solo tour. If this is what's going on, I think this is great news for Scott Stapp if this happens. And I'm happy for the guy. What do you think about this news? Do you think Scott Stapp is good for Stone Temple Pilots? And do you think this is actually going to happen, Jeff?
I like Scott Stapp. I know he has gotten a bad rap for his behaviors and his past history. I've always liked the guy. I like his voice. And I was a Creed guy. And like I said, Mark Tremonti is dynamite. And that's a great band. The thing that worries me about Stone Temple Pilots, and maybe it's just me, the Scott Weiland thing on again, off again. These guys are very quick to turn their back and push it to the side. And I don't know if Scott Stapp is ready for that. Like, if he's going to commit to this band and vice versa, it's got to be something, a project they got to commit to, get a couple albums in line, and really go for it. I think it's good. It's definitely a different sound than Weiland, but definitely something to look forward to. I mean, when you look at singers, singers are a tough breed. A name I always throw around is Mike Patton, but Mike Patton from Faith No More gets mixed into everything. So this seems to be a good move. It's a guy who is used to the fame, with a band that's used to the fame, and I think it works. I'm really hoping to see it. I would go to a show, absolutely, and give it a shot.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully this is a rumor that turns out to be true. I think this is very good for Scott Stapp. I think it's good for his health. I think it's good for his mental well-being, good for his family. You know, listen, Scott Weiland had a lot of trouble. So did Scott Stapp. Scott Weiland, unfortunately, overdosed, passed away not that long ago. Just a few months ago, really. And, you know, Scott Stapp looks to be clean, looks to be doing really good for himself, found his faith again. You know, so that's good news. I don't know if STP really turns their back on people. You know, if you look at it, yeah, Scott Stapp, he was very Scott Weiland was very unreliable. So, of course, they kept pushing him out. You know, 2013, Chester Bennington, Linkin Park, became the lead singer for Stone Temple Pilots. He left just at the end of last year on good terms because of all the stuff he's doing with his original group, Linkin Park. You know, Stone Temple Pilots, they know how to handle somebody with problems. And if Scott Stapp doesn't have the problems anymore, this could be something that could really stick around for a while, Jeff.
I'd like to think so. I mean, I know earlier today I was talking about loyalty in music when we brought up the subject, and so the whole Brian Johnson thing still twists me a little bit, that the way AC/DC kind of ousted him. But I like some of these mixtures, like Chris Cornell getting together with the guys from Rage and doing that stuff. And like I said, if Scott Stapp comes on here, I'm always into something new. I don't turn my back and say, well, it's not a band because so-and-so is not there. You get the main nucleus, you're playing the music, I'm good with it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about AC/DC real quick and Brian Johnson. Just read something on Twitter a little bit ago that Dee Snider, he did some kind of a cover of Highway to Hell, really killed it, man. It sounded great. And he said the only reason why he did that cover was because he was too tall, supposedly, to audition for AC/DC.
Now, that's interesting. I not heard that, and I don't really know if I understand what that even means, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. It's amazing. So Brian Johnson was replaced by Axl Rose, of all people, in AC/DC. Brian Johnson just came out with a statement a little while ago saying, you know, him and the band are on good terms. You know, really, he can go into the studio and record. He just can't really tour, and he can't do the live stuff because of his hearing and the potential hearing loss, due to the loud sound from the amps and from the acoustics in the arena. So, you know, my question to you is, Jeff, we heard that he was forced out of the band against his will. Is there any loyalty left in music? Because we've heard, you know, over the last couple of, you know, to a few years, a lot of band members get pushed out of bands unwillingly. Now, is that because they have problems? You know, did AC/DC do Brian Johnson a favor because they're worried about his health? Is this just they're bringing in Axl Rose for the tour and Brian Johnson's still going to record with them in studio? What do you think about the whole loyalty in music?
The loyalty in music is obviously it's fading because music is becoming more and more of a business than a creative art. We talk about sports a lot, and one day you're the guy there, and next day your contract disputed, and you're sent packing. The names of the bands, man, like AC/DC and Brian Johnson, here's a guy that's a legend, and now they move on. It's just see you later. And I mentioned to you earlier today, Black Sabbath. Bill Ward had a financial dispute, and Black Sabbath says, well, we're going on tour, and we'll see you later. Thanks for nothing. So nowadays, everything in this world has become a business. Everything is a dollar. Everything is money, and most bands do it. David Lee Roth and Van Halen. I'm a huge Van Halen guy, but they had their dispute. They brought in Sammy Hagar, went touring. Had a fallout with Sammy, brought in Gary Cherone, went out touring. Whether it works or not.
Terrible.
whether it works or not, these guys just want to go on stage and make money. So is there loyalty? I think loyalty is very limited. I think it's a tough word in this world today in general. And definitely music. Music is taking a sports approach, and you're only as good as your last 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see what happens with the whole AC/DC Brian Johnson thing, and I really am curious to see what happens with, Dee Snider's comments today about him being too tall to audition for AC/DC. I think that's absolutely phenomenal, and I think it's absolutely hilarious. I love Dee Snider, big Twisted Sister fan, so it'll be real cool to see what happens with that, man. It would have been funny seeing Dee Snider fronting AC/DC with small little Angus Young and a little bit of, smaller people. I was reading, actually, going back to the Black Sabbath comment you made, I was reading a issue of Rolling Stone today with a article on Ozzy talking about the final tour for Black Sabbath, and then they got into the whole Bill Ward thing. And, when they asked him, supposedly Bill Ward and his manager reached out to him and said, hey, you know what, we'll come back for your final leg of the tour. And they said, nah, forget it. So, I guess there's really a lot of sour grapes in there with Black Sabbath between Ozzy, Tony Iommi, the bassist, and Bill Ward. So, always fun, man.
Mr. Geezer Butler.
There you go, Geezer Butler, man. I can't believe I forgot Geezer Butler, man. Jesus.
I know, man. It's like one of the best names in rock.
It's one of those days, man. It's one of those days. All right, man. We'll get into a little NFL draft and news after we're joined by Danny Boy in a little bit. So real quick, man, we're going to talk a lot about The Outsiders and, what a phenomenal movie that was. So let's get into another phenomenal classic movie, and that's The Warriors. If you don't know what The Warriors is, look it up, because it's a phenomenal, phenomenal classic movie. And one of the actors, James Remar, supposedly brought up a possible Warriors remake, says it's possible, but only if it's handled with the utmost respect for the film's original feel. We talk a lot about remakes here, Jeff. We're really not big fans of them. When you look at The Warriors, and I'm sure you've seen it, is this a movie that you think could be remade in 2016?
I go with no. I stick to the no love for remakes, because there's not a lot of love put into these remakes. You look at the cast, and I mean, they're all aged now, but it would be neat to see some of the original members in it. But it was so unique for its time, man. That and The Outsiders is about like gangs and street gangs. And some of the guys were so great, and some of the scenes were just so awesome. It's something you hate to try and do again. Hate to try and have somebody capture the magic that once was. It's like having a comedian come out and try to talk like Bobcat or like Sam Kinison. It's done once. The magic is there once. Stop redoing things and try to make everything the way they were. It's not worth it.
Well, listen, it really interests me that, listen, if they go out and remake The Warriors, is it going to be set in the 70s? Is it going to be old school New York gangs? Are they going to turn around and it's going to be based in a 2017 type thing, and it's going to be gangs of New York today? Listen, the original was great. Michael Beck as Swan, James Remar as Ajax, the awesome David Patrick Kelly as the villain in it, Luther, David Harris as Cochise, man, Deborah Van Valkenburg. It was a great cast. A lot of them at the time being were unknowns. Some of them are very big. James Remar and David Patrick Kelly, I would say, are probably the two biggest guys out of that movie. I don't like remakes. I really don't. When a movie is good and it's already has such a big cult following and it's a legendary movie in its own right, you can't touch perfection. Even with all of the mistakes in the movie, and you can look at the movie and say, oh yeah, look, they messed up with this, oh, they messed up with that. In its own right, it's still a legendary, iconic movie, and The Warriors is one of those movies. I said that about, Big Trouble in Little China. Listen, The Rock is Jack Burton. No, it doesn't fly. Nobody can be Jack Burton like Kurt Russell. I don't know, man. Remakes gotta die, dude. It's gotta die, man. Yeah. I'm so sick of it. And you know, now we're hearing about the remake of Mary Poppins, which is also like, come on, man. Emily Blunt is Mary Poppins, and supposedly the dude from that play Hamilton is gonna play Dick Van Dyke's character.
It's terrible.
Man,
I mean, it's just neat new stuff.
Listen, and that's the thing. There's so much new stuff out there, man. There's these phenomenal, phenomenal scripts going around, and all these independent movies and all these B movies, and I just don't understand why these directors, these movie houses, they don't jump on these scripts that are sitting there and being done on low budgets, and they're so good. You know, I don't understand why they got to constantly take a concept that has already been made, has already been written, has already been done years ago. You know, you're talking about movies 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago they're remaking. They just can't come up with new stuff, man. I can't tell you how many times they're going to probably remake Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm just done with the remakes, dude. You know, I'm done with the remakes. And what really bothers me is that there are so many books out there that could be such great basis for movies, and they won't even look at them, man.
Yeah, it's going, it's just lacks creativity. Now, the lack of creativity is going to, hey, what worked back then? Let's get what worked back then, or what was big back then that people are still paying attention to we can remake and sneak in? You know, even superhero movies and stuff like that, it just all keeps coming around. How many more Supermen are we going to have? How many more Spider-Mans, Batmans? It just keeps going on and on and on. That's why, like, I finally got to see Deadpool, and for me, it's a good idea. Here's a new one, and the movie was hilarious. If you've seen it, it was great. It was graphic. It was violent. It was funny. It had sex. It was
and
great.
Which movie is that?
Deadpool.
Oh, Deadpool. Oh, yeah, because you know what? It hasn't been done before.
Exactly.
You know, and there's so many amazing characters in the Marvel Universe, and even in the DC, and you know me, I'm not a big DC guy. If you want to go back years and years and years, and you want to talk about Dr. Fate, Johnny Lightning, Wildcat, Sandman, you know, the original Green Lantern and Flash, I'll talk about those guys. Love those characters. But man, they killed the whole Batman-Superman thing. I'm so sick of Superman and Batman because that's all they go with, man. And to me, there's still nobody better than the Adam West 60s Batman. Nothing better.
Wow.
Nothing better, man. Still phenomenal after all these years, man. Cesar Romero, Burgess Meredith, man. Julie Newmar. Listen, man. Frank Gorshin. There's nothing better than that series, man. To me, that is the best Batman. And this is coming from a guy who, I like the Michael Keaton Batman. I thought it was good. But once they got into the whole darkness side, that killed it for me, man. And they're still going with it, and it's getting darker and darker.
I like the Bale stuff because it's a little different. The 60s Batman was great. And for me, for Superman, it was Christopher Reeve, man. And the Superman and Superman 2 were it, man. Stop it right there. They even came up with a great sequel, which is Abnormal. The first Superman, incredible. Superman 2 with General Zod, amazing. Stop it there. They ruined it with 3. They ruined it with 4. And so they just don't know when to stop. And so many people will still put their rears in the seats, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? Listen, man, I'll tell you right now, man. I love Christopher Reeve as Superman, but then I go back to the old, 40s Superman. You know, I loved that. You know, I loved that cartoon, man. The old Max Fleischman, Fleischer Studios cartoons. Loved those cartoons, man. Still think it was great. And I gotta say, man, you know, Dean Cain playing Superman. I actually liked that series, Lois and Clark. Thought it was a really cool series, man. I you know, they did it in a nice, light way. So, you know, hopefully they stop with the remakes and we get some new original stuff. But I'm gonna introduce our guest right now. Joining us, Danny O'Connor. Known him as Danny Boy from House of Pain. Hey, what's going on, Danny?
What's up, my man? How you doing?
How's it going tonight, brother?
I'm good.
First of all, thanks for joining us, man. Really appreciate it. I know you're super busy. We're not going to talk to you tonight about music, although I'm a huge House of Pain, Kokonosha fan. Talk about that for hours with you, man, but we won't do that tonight. A little different, man. First of all, tell us a little bit about what you do with Delta Bravo Urban Exploration Team.
Okay, so the only music we should talk about is that after House of Pain, I didn't do any road work, music work, any of that stuff for about 10 years. I had a really bad drug addiction after House of Pain, and then I got sober, and then we put La Cosa Nostra together, and then we were on tour with La Cosa Nostra, which is a side group that I do with Everlast Lethal. Basically, it's House of Pain, Nonfiction, and our guy Slain.
Yeah.
And we were in Oklahoma playing Kane's Ballroom. And we had a 3-day layover, which means the tour bus was going to sit there 3 days before it moved again to the next city.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what is there to do in Oklahoma? I was highly caffeinated, a few years sobriety, and I just bought a new camera. And it occurred to me that my favorite movie of all times was filmed in Oklahoma, which was The Outsiders. And so that day I hired a cab to take me around, and I did a little research, and I was able to find the park where they filmed the – where Johnny kills the Soch. I was able to find the house, the Outsiders house, where the Curtis brothers lived. And I was able to see the drive-in where they snuck in and, you know, got into trouble. And it kind of changed my life, you know. And then we Kane's Ballroom that night, which is a famous, it's like the CB, I like to call it the CBGBs of, like, you know, the Midwest or the, you know, of Middle America. Anybody who's anybody has played Kane's Ballroom. It's a historic joint for music.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, the owner said, "Hey, man, I know you're friends with Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols. Come in my office. I want to show you something." And he showed me a hole punched in the wall that they put a frame around. I said, "Yeah, what's that?" He said, "That's where Sid Vicious punched the hole in the wall when the Sex Pistols played here in 78. And so I posted both of those things to my Facebook, and the reaction was like bonk show. Like, people were like, "Wow, I cannot believe it. Like, where are you? That's the real house? Are you on Universal Studios lot, or what's going on? And how did you see that Sex Pistols? Like, where is that?" And so I started to think, well, you know, every town I go to, why don't I start looking for these kind of historical things and see if I could, you know, match up the photos and visit them myself. And I started doing that and posting it, and then I started attracting followers, and friends of mine were like, "This is so cool. Why don't we do this when you come back to LA, or when you come to New York? I know where this was filmed, or this true crime happened, or where LL Cool J shot his second record by his school in Queens. I could take you here." And so we just started putting together crews to do this. So it became this like little organic movement of like urban explorers, but we were putting a twist on it. We were going to see pop culture, things that were relevant to pop culture. So we weren't just looking for abandoned buildings, although we do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We were looking for historic sites. And we did that for a few years. And every time I would go back through Tulsa, Oklahoma, anytime I'd cross the U.S., which is a lot, I'd always make my way back to Tulsa. And I started to fall in love with the town, in love with the people. And then I kept thinking, man, this Outsider's house is so cool, but it's such bad condition. And every year I go back, it's looking worse and worse. And I started thinking, why doesn't somebody save it? Why doesn't somebody save it? And finally I thought, why don't I save it? And so we started looking into it, and I found the owner, and we made a deal. Now, I was hoping to call her and say, "Hey, listen," what we did, we called her. We said, "Hey, listen, if you're ever thinking of selling this, please let us know, because we were big Outsiders fans and we would like the first crack at it." And she said, "Well, I'm ready to sell." And I was like, whoa.
Wow.
Like, right now? And she was like, "Yeah, right now." And I was like, uh-oh. Because I really wasn't prepared. I was like, right now? I live in Los Angeles. So Tulsa is halfway between, you know, it's in the dead center of the U.S. So I'm like, okay, let me get back to you. And so I made a few phone calls and looked to see what I had in my savings. And, you know, we have the house now. So
So now when you bought the house, now what was your mind frame? Like, was the first thing that popped into your head that I need to restore it?
Well, can we curse? Let me tell you what my mind
was.
I'm kidding. When I first bought it, it still hasn't really sunk in. So this kind of thing has only happened about in the last 2 months. It was the lady wanted to, so I bought the house sight unseen, although I had been outside five different times. I had only got to peek my head in once, and I wasn't aware of the actual condition of the house. The house was in better condition in some places and worse than you could ever imagine in the ones that you don't want it to be worse in, which is the foundation, the stem walls, the, you know, those things are really important. If the house is crooked, it's not built on a slab. It's built on, it's kind of jacked up. It's a wood house, you know, with cement underpinnings and stuff. So I bought it sight unseen. The tenants were still living in there. They were 8 months behind in their rent. They were basically hoarding in there. It was disgusting in there. I had to pay for them to leave and get into another spot, which was not my problem, but I wanted everybody involved to feel okay about it. That being said, if money was not an issue, it wouldn't be an issue, but it was a big issue because I don't get it like that no more. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't have like 90s rap money anymore. So every little thing was like, oh my God, should I have done this? I did the wrong thing. I should have, should I have done this? But then I got there, the place was in shambles. And I put the GoFundMe together and I started putting posts about it. And I tell you what, not only did we raise money, and the money is the smallest part of it. The overwhelming support I got from local Tulsans has been like, I've never seen anything like, let's just say that. I'm overwhelmed with the offers to, I'll cut your grass. I'll cut that tree down that's about to fall on your house. I can come redo your floors for free. I'll help you tear out drywall. My uncle owns a company that makes drapes. We can remake the old drapes. You're missing the original door. I can make a door for you. I mean, it's been one after the other. I've never seen anything like it. So
that's amazing.
So far, we've raised close to $18,000. The goal was $75,000, and it's still not done.
Yeah.
But because of the offers and the support, I don't know if we're going to need that number anymore. We may. Mm-hmm. I'm still not sure. But and also, I got a check that I'm not really. One, I haven't cashed it yet, and two, I don't know if I'm at liberty to. I'm at liberty, but I haven't talked to her yet. But Essie Hinton sent me a nice sizable check. So
which
is the author of The Outsiders,
yes.
And she's been on board since day one. Even though we didn't tell her, I didn't tell her what my plans were, even to buy it. I bought it first and asked questions later. You know, hey, you guys cool with this? Like via Twitter, and she was like, yo. I'm usually apprehensive about GoFundMe things, but I know you'll put it in the right thing. And she started retweeting it for me. She started telling her supporters, hey, this guy's, he's doing
that's
it.
Amazing.
And then she said, I want to send you a check. I don't want GoFundMe to take a piece. And I told her, well, I'll probably just frame it anyway. And she said, you will, capital letters, not frame this check. And so when I got it, it's a nice size check. And yeah, it's everything. So. Now, I'm in New York right now. I had to take care of some business here, but I've been going back to L.A., sleeping, a couple of days at home and then getting in my car, and I drive to Tulsa. I stay on my man's couch, and we go to the outsider's house on the daily, and we're ripping out drywall. We're getting rid of the roaches. We're shaking hands and kissing babies. The mayors came by. The city councils came by. I was on the front page of the Tulsa World. I was on every channel in Tulsa. It's almost breaking news. So it would be like Tornado Watch. Then California rapper buys the Outsiders house. It was incredible. So it's like, it's just been like that one after the other. And every day I get a call from somebody. Hey man, I got this kind of thing. I want to donate it. A guy came out of the woodwork. He was a ex Tulsa PD, and he brought me Francis Ford Coppola's chair, which was originally stolen while they were filming Rumblefish. So they filmed The Outsiders and Rumblefish back to back, both written by Essie Hinton, both in Tulsa, and both, by Francis Ford. And during the filming, a homeless guy grabbed the chair and started walking off with it. And the security said, hey, hey, hey. And Francis said, if he wants it bad enough, let him have it. So I had heard that story from a friend that I had met online as well.
Yeah.
Who was there during the shoot. He told me this story. And then the cop hits me up and says, I got something for you. It's worth a couple grand. I want you to see it. So when he came and he brought it, I had already knew the backstory. I wanted to hear his story. And he said, I was called out to the scene about a week after the chair was stolen. And there was a homeless guy living in back of a liquor store who kept playing games with the trains because the trains go by there. And the owners were scared that he was going to end up killing himself by jumping in front of a train or jumping out in front of the traffic and wanted him out of there. So when I went to evict him out of the basically back of the liquor store, I said, grab your stuff. You got to get out of here. And he goes, wait a minute. Where did you get this chair? And the guy said, you know, he said, like all perps usually say, it ain't mine. So my friend gave it to me. You can have it. So he's had that chair for 33 years
wow.
in his man cave, and he thought it belongs in the house. And I agree, except I just don't want the Smithsonian Museum to come after me or him, Francis Ford, to say, hey, that's my chair. So
yeah, right.
It is, it, you know, everybody heard Francis say if he wants it that bad, he can have it. So,
mm-hmm.
And it's
mm-hmm.
been 33 years, and it's in a good home. Either way, it's,
oh, yeah,
I believe it's going to be what it's going to be. And people have been – believe me, coming out of the woodwork for stuff like that. I got another collector who has Soda Pop's DX uniform. He's
oh,
got
nice.
Two bits Mickey's shirts that he bought at auction in 83 when they had Zoetrope, I guess, had a bankruptcy sale. They
yeah.
sold all the props for all his movies and all the stuff, and they bought a lot of the Outsider stuff. And he said, I'll loan it to you indefinitely. And then I want it back, and then I'll give it back to you. So I said, hey, I'm not looking to own anything. I'm just looking to showcase it all. And my whole thing was just to save the house from the demo. So
yeah.
I got there, and a week into it, a guy pulls up, and he says, yeah, I work for Habitat. I'm in the neighborhood. I find these houses and tear them down for Habitat for Humanity. And I'm not going to lie to you. Your house was on my list. And my heart stopped, you know. And that was the kind of stuff I was thinking in my, you know, my mind, like, what if they tear this house down? What if this house burns down? What if, you know? And it was true. It was like that little voice in my head was telling me, dude, step in, buy this thing because they're going to tear it down. And sure enough, that guy showed up and said, hey, man, he sounded like he was trying to be happy for me, but I could tell he was bummed that he didn't get to tear it down and put a cheap Habitat for Humanity house and get his, you know, his little kickback.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Well, thank
we
God
saved
that
it. Nah, no doubt. And so,
yeah.
That's where
now,
I'm at.
Once you restore it and get this all up and running, you're turning it into a museum?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. So it's a museum, and it's also a private residence. I don't plan to live there. I plan to stay there part-time. I don't know what I really have to do to turn it into a full-time museum. And
okay.
right now, that's literally out of the question in the sense that, like, I can't be open 8 in the morning till 6, like a museum. It's in a residential
mm-hmm.
neighborhood, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
my plan is, the first two rooms when you walk in and the exterior look exactly like they do in the movie because that's where most of the inside, you know, that's where it was mostly shot.
Yep.
So we're trying to stage the first two rooms to look like they did during the filming. So when you walk in, you'll feel like you're walking into the movie itself because
– that's awesome.
You know, the rest – there's three other rooms that never appeared in the – it's a four-bedroom house. So there's three other rooms that never appeared in the – film. I will stock those with my I have a pretty nice size collection myself of Outsider stuff,
mm-hmm.
posters from all over the world, movies from all over the world, just you name it, I have it. If it's out there, I have it. If I don't, I'm about to, you know, I got my finger on it. So I'm going to stage the first two rooms, fill the other rooms with the collection, and then I'll put one room in the back for when me and my wife go and, you know, stay there or whatever, or people come
yeah.
in. Whatever. If you tell me you're in Tulsa one time, hey, man, go stay in the Outsider's house, you know? Or when we're not there, someone who can, you know, maybe be on premises to hold it down, open it up for school children,
mm-hmm.
open it up for a private event, open it up for viewing, whatever. But
yeah.
hopefully we can open it up a couple times a month and then do private things. So if the local school says, hey, our kids are reading the book right now, we told them about the house, can we come by on a Sunday at, yeah, of course. You know, and then we'll
yeah.
show it. But my whole thing was to save it from being wrecked and two, to just somewhere to house the collection and then allow people in. But we're still working on how that all is going to play out. But yes, it's going to be a private collection / museum. And that's what it is for. I'm still not fully committed to, you know, I like L.A., you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And I love Tulsa, but I still have to, I got one foot in and one foot out, you know, as far as
yeah,
like committing to
yeah.
living there full time. And then I like my privacy as well, and
yeah.
you're not going to get it in that house, especially since we started, you know, I was in restaurants and people were coming up asking for autographs and thanking me. I felt like it was 92 again and jump around. I just come out, you know what I mean? And I hadn't got that kind of attention in a long time. So Tolson's no, and thank God. And you know, God bless him. But so I just, we're sorting all that out, but yeah, you know, that's where we're at right now. And that's, you know, it's my passion. It's what I do. And I only look at myself as a custodian of this thing, you know, hopefully it'll outlast all of us. So,
yeah. Did you think when you were wrapping up and, you know, really big in the 90s that this is what you would be doing now?
No. And again, I talked about the you know, I've been up and down and every which way but loose. And so do it for a dead guy. I'm doing pretty good. I never seen this coming.
Yeah.
But what this has done is freed me from being, quote unquote, like Danny Boy, which might not be something special to you, but it's a full time job for me to carry that bullshit around.
Yeah.
And so for me, it just allowed me to be that childlike kid who was a huge fan of The Outsiders, loved Fast Times at Ridgemont High, you know, loved Valley Girl, loved the, you know, Stand By Me. It made me a fan again, you know? And
yeah.
So urban exploring through the group that we put together, the Delta Bravo thing, kind of just made us all like grown man goonies. We would all get together, eat lots of pizza, drink lots of, you know, coffee, and then just go out and just run around the city looking for historic locations, whether it was the Beastie Boys photo or a, you know, Son of Sam murder location or a, you name it, we've done it all. A Marilyn Monroe where her dress blows up in Some Like It Hot or whatever, you know, in the middle of Manhattan. It just, every city we go, we would just get together and just run around. So yeah, it's like a hobby that turned into the greatest thing ever, which was it allowed me to, you know, save The Outsider's house. So
that's great. And especially that you were a big fan of, you know, the book and the movie. I mean, that's got to just be just an incredible feeling to know that it's in your possession now.
Listen, it never gets old. Every time I tweet something and SC Hinton retweets it, I still, you know, I'm still like, oh my God.
That's amazing.
She's so much bigger than like a rapper retweeting you. Like if 50 Cent retweeted, I'd be like, hey, I ain't gonna lie, I'd be high fiving my, you know, my homie, like, hey, check it, 50 just but when SC Hinton does it, like, I tell my wife, oh my god, she's like, what? I'm like, yo, SC Hinton. She's like, I know, she did it yesterday too. I'm like, I know, but yo, it's SC Hinton. She's like, I know. It's like, it's that big, you know what I mean?
You're a fan of her writing and her books. Of course, you're a fan of
and
text.
It's something
and,
sacred.
Yeah,
it's something sacred because it was like something from, you know, my youth that carried over into my adult life where not a lot of things still do. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So, absolutely. Well, no, listen, man, I can't thank you enough for doing this. For me being a huge Outsider fan, I had the chance of meeting Ralph Macchio and C. Thomas Howell together a couple of years ago and talking to them about it. And, you know, this is, you know, it's a big movie, man. The fans are out there for it, so that you're doing
this, and,
you know, awesome.
The book keeps them, you know, it's required reading a lot for a lot of people, so people get indoctrinated with the stories at 6 years old, and people up to 100 years old probably are familiar with it, and, you know, grandparents have read it, their kids have read it, their grandkids have read it, and the movie also, you know, and all the stars that came out of that movie, the fact that Francis Ford Coppola did those movies, there's so many layers to it. And so you can't pick a something that has a broader spectrum and a bigger target audience. It's affected so many people in such a positive way. And so just to be, again, the custodian of like the house with the collection, believe me, bro, it's bigger than House of Pain. It's bigger than anything that I've done, you know, because it's pure, you know, it's not my work. It's just, I'm just one little piece of, you know, a little wheel, a little cog in the grand scheme, but I'm so glad that I was able to, you know, be that part.
Big part of history now you are. Have you had any contact with any of the actors from the movie, and have they showed any interest in helping out?
Well, yes and no. So, one, I want to say this. On August 6th, for all the Tulsans listening, we're doing an event at it's called the Venue Shrine.
Yes.
And we have C. Thomas on board. We have Darren Dalton, who was the Soch, Randy.
Yes. Yeah.
We have the kids from the 52-card pickup scene, which I always knew two of them, but now we found the third guy, the brunette-headed kid.
Oh, nice.
We just found out who he was. His wife said, yo, that's my husband. I was like, no way. So I started talking. He's like, yeah. He ran down the whole story and how he was picked. He was just sitting out on the railroad track by his grandmother's, and they said, hey, you interested in you know? He's like, you know, a six-year-old kid. He's like, sure. And they put him in the movie like that. So we were looking for him for a long time. We got a bunch of the cops that shot Dally. But we're throwing that event. And then Matt Dillon, I've always been a fan of, even, you know, prior to The Outsiders, there was Over the Edge. There was My Bodyguard. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Some of the movies he'd done before that. And I was a huge fan of the character, the Dallas Winston character. So he follows me on Twitter. I follow him on Twitter. He sees the post, because so far no direct, like, yo, I want to give you the gun for that movie. None of that has happened yet.
That'd be nice.
So, and then, yeah, I know, right? You know, you got to think big. And then Tom Cruise, who knows how to – he's like in a different stratosphere.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Rob Lowe follows the Outsider's House page and has, like, responded back to tweets that someone has, like, included me, S.E. Hinton, in, but never said, hey, I love what you're doing, and, you know, how can I help? So I think my best guess is they're waiting to see how real this thing is. And even though it's real, some people want to see you show and prove, you know what I mean? Before
Definitely.
So, and fair enough, I'm here, so I'm going to show and prove. So I'm not, again, I would have thought maybe they would have got involved sooner.
Yeah.
But on the same token, I understand, hey, even if they don't show up, no worries. We got this, because the way that the community as a whole jumped in and helped me out with this thing, there's no fear behind it. There's no stress. I haven't been stressed by any of this, and it's a big task for me. I mean,
yeah.
I'm the kind of guy, my laundry is unmanageable. You know what I mean? I think about having to do it. I'm like, I get overwhelmed. This house is overwhelming, but I don't feel any of that fear once I got to Tulsa, because that community put me in the center and gave me that big, like, hug, you know, and we got you. And I've never felt that before. So,
yeah. Well, you seem to be enjoying yourself doing it too, which is really nice.
I
you can
it.
See from the pictures
oh,
when you put
it
up. You're lighting up, man. It's cool to see. So,
yeah, I appreciate it. Yep.
Absolutely, man. Well, you know what? We're gonna get the link out to our listeners tonight. We're gonna put it up on our Facebook page and everything. So, Danny, listen. Thanks for joining us, man. We really appreciate it. We got to get you back on in the future, man, so we can.
Hey,
talk
next time
more.
We'll talk music. I'll bring on Ill Bill and Slane, and we'll chop it up.
Awesome.
I'll tell you all the House of Pain craziness, and I'll tell you all
Love
the
it.
Good stuff with LaCoca and et cetera, et cetera. But I appreciate you, man, and I really appreciate you helping me spread the gospel. And, you know, not to sound cliche, but I will, man. You know, you guys stay gold.
You too, man. Thanks so much, brother. Appreciate it.
Talk soon, guys.
Take care.
Cheers.
And that was Danny Boy O'Connor from the iconic hip-hop group House of Pain. Dude, he lights up, man, when talking about this project, man, and it's nice to see that he's doing good. You know, he's clean, and you know, he's doing something really good, not only for the people of Tulsa, but for the fans of S.E. Hinton, for the Outsiders book, for the movie, for Ralph Macchio's fans, for C. Thomas Howell's fans, for Rob Lowe, for Patrick Swayze, you know, for everybody that was involved in this movie. It's a great, great thing that he's doing, Jeff.
Really is, and he is really into it. He's so excited he can barely catch his breath, man. He's talking and loving it, and it's great. It's kind of like what we do here. You do it for the fun. You do it for the people who are into it, and you're into it to yourself. And it's more than just, hey, what's in it for me? And
Absolutely.
You know, that's awesome. That's such a great thing. It makes the project that much better, and the fact that he's so into it is going to make it, when it finally is all said and done, it's going to make it just incredible.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you can go on Facebook. It's facebook.com/TheOutsidersHouse. And if you're just a Monstrous fan that wants to donate even $5 of your money to help Danny with this amazing, amazing project he's doing, you can go to GoFundMe.com/TheOutsidersHouse. We'll have both links up on our Facebook page. We'll have both links up on our Twitter. And hopefully in the next couple of weeks when we launch our official website finally, still working hard on it, we'll have something special for Danny and the Outsiders House project up there. Awesome stuff, man. Let's jump into a little bit of sports real quick, man. The NFL draft finally was here this past week, and it left. And we, you know what, man, we had some interesting things happen in the NFL draft this year, Jeff. And one of the big things was Laremy Tunsil dropping from pretty much one of the top three picks down to number 13. going to the Miami Dolphins because of supposedly somebody hacking his Twitter account and putting up a video of him smoking dope out of a bong, a gas mask bong. And then he gets picked by the Miami Dolphins and Mike Tannenbaum, former Jets GM down there. And what happens later on, his Instagram gets hacked, and supposedly it's a text message conversation with him and his coach over at Ole Miss, supposedly asking for rent money for his apartment and his coach agreeing to give it to him, which he agreed, which he actually admitted at his press conference. It was an interesting draft, Jeff. This, unfortunately, was the biggest story of the draft that really overshadowed it. First, things like this. Laramie Tunzel, what do you think is going to happen next?
It's kind of like I said earlier, it's a tough racket because they are still, in essence, college kids. These are young kids still, 20 years old, just coming off being teenagers, and they see smoking dope and partying, and even as far as like the Twitter comments where people were saying, oh, like Jared Goff said he wanted to punch Puig and Yasiel Puig from the Dodgers in the mouth and stuff like that. They're kids, man, and you kind of hope they grow out of it. If they don't grow out of it, they'll grow up to be older assholes, and they'll be out of the league anyway. Some of the kids are going to grow up to be men. Their mistakes are going to be past them, and they're going to be playing the game and getting paid big money for it, and people are going to root for them. Some people don't get past it. You know, you're Johnny Manziel. He's not going to get past it. All right, fine, he's out. Look, now nobody wants him. This kid Tunzel, I think he felt the remorse, kind of seen talking to him on draft day. He said, you know, the goal now is just to be the best guy that was taken in this draft and put everything else behind him. Let's see if he does it.
It's going to be real interesting. Now, let's talk a little bit about the first couple of picks. Los Angeles Rams go with Jared Goff, which really surprised a lot of people thinking Carson Wentz was going to go number one, but he went number two to your Philadelphia Eagles. What do you think about this pick?
I'm willing to give this pick a shot. I know people are down on the Division 2A or whatever, but he's a winner. He's won a couple championships down in North Dakota there, and Goff just he doesn't have the winning record. Both big kids, big strong, good arms. I think the Eagles made the right move because they get a guy that's mobile. Always seems to be a Philadelphia thing. A quarterback with decent legs always seems to do good here. The Randall Cunninghams and Donovan McNabbs. And even a brief stint with Vic, this team needs guys that can move around, and I think it's a great pick. I think they did tremendous. Of course, the proof is in the pudding. Got to wait to see how it is on the field, but of course, you'll have to get him, but I'm going to give him every chance. Going to welcome the guy with open arms. Let's see what he can do.
Yeah, it's going to be great, man, to see what he does there. I like Wentz a lot, man. I love his personality, so it'll be interesting to see. Joey Bosa going to the Chargers. I know this really shocked a lot of people with the Chargers taking a defensive end number three, but this is what they really needed. Bosa could be really big for the Chargers, but I got to say, man, he dropped to number four, which doesn't seem like a lot, but for a guy that could have either went number one or number two, Ezekiel Elliott, running back, going to the Philadelphia Eagles, arch nemesis, the Dallas Cowboys. This is a win pick for the Cowboys. Jeff, do you agree?
Right before the show started, I did kind of rip on him with that tuxedo and that goofy shirt. There's a win. Goofy and typical Dallas Cowboy. If you're an Eagle fan, the guy's fit for that team. But, hey, if this guy can run and approves the way he ran in college, he is going to be a thorn in my side for years. Kid's got the potential to be a great running back. And he said he's a tremendous blocker, which – really hurts because Dallas has a great O-line. Now you got a guy that can block in the backfield that can be big trouble. But their defense is still a mess, so I'm hopeful. Yeah, it's a good pick, though. And the Joey Bosa thing kind of surprised me. I kind of had him locked in being higher. He was talked about as the number one overall pick for months, and then all the trades happened and kind of twisted everything around.
Yeah, absolutely. We can go through every single pick. There were some really good ones, some questionable ones. My Jets went with Darren Lee over who I really wanted and Paxton Lynch. But I got to say, Denver Broncos taking Paxton Lynch, smart move. This kid could be real special in Denver, Jeff.
That's a fantastic move. I like Lynch. When it came to the Eagles picking eighth, I'm like, you know what? If Wentz and Goff were going, I would take on Lynch. Again, guy with kind of a playmaker, a guy that can make stuff happen. And, it's going to be a rough year for him to learn the system. He's going to play behind Mark Sanchez, which is kind of like playing behind me. But take a year, learn it. And then you got Emmanuel Sanders. You got Demaryius Thomas. You still got some running backs. This guy can inherit an excellent offense the following year when he's finally ready to go, unless they run him out there this year.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with a lot of these rookies in the NFL next season. Just some really good picks going out. I had to say, I know next year's draft is supposed to be very rich in running backs, but man, I got to give props to the Dallas Cowboys. I think that was a very, very, very smart move by the Dallas Cowboys going with running back at number four. Good move for them, man. I have to agree with you, man. I think he's going to be a real thorn in your side, man, for a lot of years to come, dude.
Oh, yeah. Could very well be. I thought one of the greatest picks, I think Tennessee coming back and making that move again to get to eight and getting Conklin was a tremendous move. That kid is an animal. And, again, if I want to sit still with the Eagles at eight, I want a Conklin. Kid's a tackle, I think, is going to just – be one of the best tackles in the league in a couple of years. He's such a beast. And Tennessee, you know, they made their trade, and there was like, they're going to fall. They'll get a guy mid-range, add to the mix. Got a couple good running backs now. Got a monster at offensive lineman, a young quarterback. Tennessee's making their moves, man. They're doing it right.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, man, before we go, man, I got to bring this up, man, because this has been in the news a lot the last couple of weeks. Michael Strahan leaving live with him and Kelly Ripa. So now there's a lot of rumors going around. Who's going to be Kelly Ripa's newest co-host? So far being rumored is Mario Lopez, Anderson Cooper, Andy Cohen, Neil Patrick Harris, even the return of Regis Philbin. Listen, you work, I work. We're not big daytime TV watchers, but we know Regis and Kathy Lee. You know, we knew when Kelly Ripa took over, you know, you just can't not know about this show because it is it's its own animal. It has a life of its own. And now Michael Strahan leaving and supposing really just, you know, pretty much leaving Kelly Ripa hanging. Who would you want to see as her co-host? If you can just name anybody, who do you think would be perfect for a show like that, man?
I've got three people I'd love to see potentially. One, Jeff the Shark Perini. I think that show would be fantastic. I would kill it on that show. Number two, the shameless plug of Mia Khalifa. No, I'm sorry. I had to get that out there. But you said Neil Patrick Harris. I think that's really good, and he's very entertaining, very energetic. And I'm not trying to be closed-minded. It's a very open-minded statement, but getting a gay man in there, daytime television, you know, the women would love him in the morning, and it would just add more to the show, I think. I think it takes the show in a little different direction. Strahan, although good on the show, is a little too jock for what the show is all about. Maybe that adds something to it. I think Neil Patrick Harris is a great choice. I think it's past Regis. I don't think Regis is capable of carrying it anymore. But, of everybody you named on that list, I like the sound of Neil Patrick Harris.
I would love Neil Patrick Harris. I have to say, though, man, it's – when Regis left and Kelly came in, you know, after Kathy Lee Gifford left, the big thing was we need a you know, somebody of color. I mean, that's always the big thing going on when, you know, it's a predominantly Caucasian show. You know what I'm saying? And I just don't see Anderson Cooper, Andy Cohen, Neil Patrick Harris, or even Regis Philbin coming back. I really think it's going to be somebody like Mario Lopez, because I think if they go with another white co-host and they go back to the days of Regis and Kelly, which people bitched about because of the lack of color, I just don't see them going back because that is so much bigger now in 2016 than it was in the 90s when all of that stuff was going on, man.
Makes sense. I think Mario Lopez is terrible. I think it's an absolute train wreck.
Oh, I think he's a douche, but that's just my opinion.
I'm going to go with somebody of color. You reinvent a guy a little bit. Bring back Arsenio Hall. Put him on daytime. He's energetic. He gets the crowd moving. The guy's funny.
I'm going to sap you up with a biscuit.
There's a spot for him. You know what I mean? Right there. That's a good spot. I like that idea.
Listen, I want it to be Eddie Murphy, but in the character of Jackson Heights' own Randy Watson and Sexual Chocolate.
Man, now you're asking a lot. Hey, Tim Meadows, if you want to go that route. I mean, come on now.
Nah, Tim Meadows, maybe he's on the Goldbergs. He's doing a phenomenal job. So,
yeah, he is.
Going back to our whole STP comment, you sent this to me on Facebook just a little bit ago. Stone Temple Pilots putting that 2 hours ago. Despite recent comments, Scott Sapp is not, nor has he ever been considered as the singer for Stone Temple Pilots. Damn shame.
They turned it back on him already. I told you. You guys are a bunch of douches. They turned it back. Guy didn't even get in the band yet, or he turned it back on.
Listen. They asked Scott Stapp about a rumor. He said, listen, I can't say yes or no because maybe he didn't know if he was being considered to be in this group. The way Stone Temple Pilots worded it on their Facebook page, kind of think it's kind of douchey. Despite recent comments, Scott Stapp is not, nor has he ever been considered as the singer for STP. Why can't they have written, we love Scott Stapp, we know he's a great singer, we're still in the middle of considering a lot of people. To me, this is kind of a dig at Scott Stapp.
To me, I mean, it's only what you read me here. The Leo brothers, Dean and Robert, they just strike me as two just egotistical jackasses, really. I mean, always got, and they say, yeah, they could have played it simple. Say, well, you know, we've heard of Scott Stapp rumors. We haven't spoken to Scott at this time or anything like that. Just not in big letters and is not being considered in big letters. That's childish.
Yeah, that's, I don't get it, man. I really don't get it. So what you're saying is that the DeLeo brothers, they're kind of like the Gallagher brothers, and are they as douchey as Alex and Eddie Van Halen, or you think they're douchier?
I think they're douchier. And the reason why I think they're douchier is because at least Alex and Eddie got mega talent. Now, don't get me wrong. I like Stone Temple Pilots, and I liked a lot of their songs, and I got tons of their songs on my my phone, and I listen to them stuff a lot, but they strike me as douchey. I mean, I like it for Scott more than the DeLeos, you know. Some of the brothers, the Gallaghers, the Van Halens, the DeLeos, because they get their strength in numbers, and they bully around their bandmates, man. I'm going to get my brother on the show. We're going to bully you around next.
You know what, man? I really don't know if it's, you know what, man? If I got to pick the Van Halens or the DeLeos, I don't know. I think I would go with the DeLeos. I think the Van Halens have burned so many damn people. They've burned David Lee Roth a bunch. They've burned Sammy Hagar to the point where he wouldn't even spit on them if they were on fire. And then they burned Michael Anthony, one of the quietest guys who just sits in the background, great bassist. And then they kick him out for Eddie Van Halen's chubby little son. So...
Well, I mean, if you want to get into rock douchiness, and a guy I used to love, we talked about him a couple weeks ago, Gene Simmons. Now,
oh, geez, Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley are the douchiest of douches, man.
Paul Stanley actually kind of swallowed a little pride, and him and Ace Frehley got together, and they did a remake for one of Ace's new albums. It's like a cover album, and Paul got together, and he did a number with him, and he said, you know, time to bury the hatchet, man. Let's get to music, man. It's always been a joint for us. And Simmons is just doing his thing, just still being a dick and acting like he's the king of rock and roll.
Listen,
so,
dude,
I
don't want nothing to do. I know people love Ace Frehley, but I have my own quips about something in person with him, which is why I don't think Ace Frehley is all that innocent all the time either. And,
okay,
I buy. Yeah, you know, so I mean, listen, I know people go bananas for Kiss, but at the same time, people went bananas for Tiffany and Debbie Gibson. That's all I'm going to say. So.
Wow. Harrison, you're out there.
They're not as talented as they think they are. I give credit to Gene Simmons, smart businessman. But that's about it. Musically, they have a couple of good songs, but... Honestly, I think Stone Temple Pilots with no singer could actually cover a Kiss song better, to be honest. But
do you really need a singer? I always
no.
liked I know a band that covers them a lot is Anthrax. Anthrax does a lot of their stuff, and it always sounds so much more like a rock song. I grew up as a Kiss fan, but, man, the Anthrax remakes are always great. They do the songs just so good.
I don't know. Kiss, to me, just always sounds sloppy, like they never practice. And that's just the way it's been. Listen, man, Kiss was a freaking phenomena. You know, they're really not as much now. To me, with with so many of the things that are surrounding Kiss, and you're talking about, the late, great Eric Carr and what happened with him and Kiss, which was just absolutely, in my opinion, disgusting, where he wanted to play. I can't think of it off the top of my head right now, but he got invited to play with somebody. I can't remember who it was. That he absolutely adored. Might have been Ace Frehley. Could have been Ringo Starr because I know he's a big Beatles fan. It was something like that. And Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley said, no, if you do it, you're out. You know, basically, you can't go off for a day to play with this person or group that you absolutely love. And, you know, Eric Carr, he died at such a very, very young age from, I believe cancer of the heart, man. It was something really rare and... Yeah, something really bad. And Eric Carr was a phenomenal drummer, man. And, he died so young at 41, man. And he never got that chance. So when I heard about that with Eric Carr, and I really liked Eric Carr, he was with I can't remember who he was with before that. But anyway, I really liked Eric Carr. And then when I heard about that story and I heard about the way, they screwed – Peter Criss, and I like Bruce Kulick a lot, and I think he got screwed by Kiss as well, if I'm not mistaken. But they screwed so many people, Jeff, man. And if we had a douche top five, Kiss number one, Van Halen number two, probably the Gallagher's number three, the DeLeo's number four. I don't know who I'd pick number five.
I'm sure they're out there. Who's that Sugar Ray dude? What was his name again?
Mark McGrath.
Yeah. Seems douchey.
Really? Really? And I heard some really good things about him, man.
Well, now I just look like a douche then for saying that. Number five, okay. Jeff the Shark Marini. He's number five douche.
I mean, who knew? Listen, who knows? He could have been a douche, but I mean, I've always heard good things about Mark McGrath, so that would be disappointing, man.
Well, you never know. It's a thin line.
I know who I'll go with for one of the biggest douches. I'll put him in my number five, but he could probably move up a couple of spots. Lars Ulrich, Metallica.
I hear that. I try not to dislike Metallica, but I've heard him. I've heard Hetfield could be a douche, too. There's that video on YouTube of Hetfield, and he mocks Layne Staley of Alice in Chains, and he's mocked artists that have passed away on stage, and that stuff is very it's unsettling. It really is.
And it bothers me that I've given a lot of money to Metallica.
Sure.
And the last time I saw Metallica – was at the Wells Fargo Center back in, I'm going to say, 09, maybe 10. I believe it was 09 because that was the Death Magnetic Tour. I spent $100 to stand on the floor up against the stage. Probably one of the worst concerts I've ever been to in my life.
Wow.
And this, listen, you know what, man? You want to do Ride the Lightning? You want to do Master of Puppets, the Black Album? I'm all for it. I'll blast it every day. Love that music. Got to give them a lot of credit. Me, growing up, more and more, as I was getting older, I became more of a Megadeth fan. Dave Mustaine, we hear he could be an asshole, but then we hear other things, too, from the people that were in his bands that, he's really, just a big part of it, but the music never changes with Megadeth, and they don't go out of their way to constantly look like douchebags. And I love Dave. I absolutely adore the new lineup of Megadeth. Just got to see them a couple of months ago. Absolutely phenomenal. Chris Adler on drums from Lamb of God. Kiko Romero, phenomenal guitarist. Listen, they're still kicking ass, and they sound absolutely phenomenal today than they did 20 years ago. Metallica, on the other hand, 20 years ago, phenomenally sounding. Today, they just don't give the effort anymore, man. It's like they're just done, But it is what it is. I mean, I would never go see – listen, man, even if I got a ticket for free, I probably wouldn't go see Metallica in concert again. And listen, I know it's going to piss off a lot of Metallica fans. I'm still a Metallica fan. Just the Metallica of today, I'm not a fan of. That's just – is what it is.
I guess the whole Dave Mustaine thing, and you said he comes off as an asshole. Someone that's kind of his persona, he still has the angry thing in him from the whole Metallica issue, and extremely intelligent. The guy is so intelligent that it comes off as arrogant sometimes. He's very well spoken. People think he's metalheads, they don't know what they're talking about. Guy's very intelligent too. So yeah, maybe there's a little arrogance behind it, but it's a good thing. The guy's very talented.
I would absolutely love to have Dave Mustaine on here and just talk to him. Just pick his brain, listen to what he has to say. Because, listen, when you go to the concerts, he talks a lot about the political stuff. He says it. Dystopia, the last album, he says this world isn't a dystopia. You can't not agree with that. You know?
Yeah.
The guy is smart. He sees things that are going on, and he speaks it in his music. So, I'm pro Megadeth, dude. You know, and that's just the way it is. So maybe we'll do our top five douchebag list real soon.
I like that. I like that a lot. Not afraid to put myself on that list. Nah, how can I put myself on a list when guys like Jerry Jones are around this planet? You know, there's a douche. I can go on.
You say that because of, you know, who he is, and you're an Eagles fan. I felt the same way about... you know, about the Flyers and Ed Snyder, and I felt the same way about the Phillies and all their guys, and you think they're the bee's knees, and you think the Mets, well, shit, I have to say, I think the Wilpons suck, so, and I think they're douchebags, so. Oh, man.
How about Belichick? How big of a douche do you think Belichick is being a Jets fan?
Oh, dude, even if I wasn't a Jets fan.
See? Because of who he is.
Bill Belichick is a dumbass. So, but that's just because he's always been a dumbass. He was a dumbass when he was on the Jets coaching staff, and I didn't like him.
You know, I hate to say it here, and being a huge football fan, the guy rolled in shit and came out smelling like a rose. He rolled into this Tom Brady thing. He rolled into this little defensive scheme, and he found somehow ball players that united Teddy Bruschi and Vrabel and Willie McGinnis and guys like that. Guys have become that mesh. And then, you know, from there it just kind of ran out because they were a constant winner and everybody wanted to be part of a winner.
Listen, Bill Belichick has a lot to thank the New York Jets for. He has a lot. He got paid by them for a few years when Bill Parcells was there. They let him walk. They could have really fought that, but they let him go to New England. And if it wasn't for Mo Lewis and that massive destructive hit on Drew Bledsoe, which almost killed Drew Bledsoe. He was close to dying.
Yeah.
Legit.
Yeah.
Who knows where Tom Brady would be today? Because Drew Bledsoe probably could have played another year, two, three, 4 years in New England because he went on to play with Dallas for a little bit and I believe Buffalo, right?
I believe you're right, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he went on to play, I'm pretty sure, a few more years after that. Yeah, because 2001 is when he got hit. He played from 2002 to 2004 in Buffalo, 2005 to 2006 in Dallas, two seasons there.
Tom Brady could have been just a clipboard guy.
Absolutely.
But everything happened. I guess everything happens for a reason. You can't, you know.
Listen, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, if you're proud to be winners by cheating, then I guess have fun with that. So,
yes.
Crazy stuff.
Barry Bonds. He runs with it.
Oh, man. Don't even get started on Barry Bonds and the whole D. Gordon thing, man. He's already teaching his hitters Barry Bonds way.
Everybody said that right away. I got a guy at work. He is a Miami guy for everything. He's not a front runner or any of that. He's a huge Dolphins guy. He's a huge Marlins guy. He's just a Miami guy. And he said, this is what I got to deal with. He said, Barry Bonds comes to town, and now D. Gordon's doing PEDs. And if it doesn't go hand in hand, man, it can't get any crazier than that.
Let me ask you this. How in the hell is Barry Bonds in Major League Baseball? He cheated. He lied. He still didn't admit to taking PEDs and steroids. Yet, Rafael Palmeiro is a ghost.
Yeah, absolutely. It depends on the guy. I mean, Mark McGwire got jobs in Major League Baseball, and he's a hitting coach. Here's a guy that was known nothing more than being juiced up and tagging a baseball and knocking it 500 feet. But he's a hitting coach? What is he teaching these guys? How to slap at the opposite field? That's like Ryan Howard being a hitting coach and teaching guys how to hit to the opposite field. It doesn't make any sense. And now Bonds. He's known as a home run guy and an alleged, get that word in there, alleged steroid abuser. He's got a job in Major League Baseball.
Unbelievable, man. You know, man, and you know what? That always baffles me too, man. When pitchers suck, they play maybe five games in the majors because they're so awful. How do they become great pitching coaches?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's always
the way. If you can train yourself to be a good pitching coach, you know, a good pitcher on the mound, how the hell can you train somebody else to be a good pitcher? I don't get it.
For years, the Phillies had Rich Doobie for years, and never a big Rich Doobie guy, but his career was nothing. And here he is, this great pitching coach. And, you know, I guess it is when you're on the sideline enough or in the dugout enough or whatever, and you're watching guys that are really good, maybe you learn something. I said that forever about Doug Peterson, and now he's here with Philly. Clipboard holder to some of the best. I mean, he played behind McNabb, and he played behind Brett Favre, and coaches like Gruden and Andy Reid and Holmgren and all them guys. I guess you learn some stuff, and you can bring in a teaching method. It's about being a good teacher, I guess, more than being a good player. And if you think about it, some of the great players don't make good coaches.
I mean, listen, look at Rick Peterson. When he was with the Oakland Athletics, that pitching staff was phenomenal. He was sought after. The Mets signed him to a big deal. The guy never made it to the major leagues, and he was terrible in the minor leagues. Yet he becomes this legendary pitching coach.
The guy that always gets me, and you think, of course, the La Russa era, was Dave Duncan. Dave Duncan had amazing pitching staff. Here's a catcher. Not even a top-flight catcher. I think he made one All-Star team, but it's just an average catcher, Dave Duncan. He becomes this amazing pitching coach. It's wild.
Yeah, it really is, man. It really is. Something that we'll talk about later on in the program. So, you know what? Great show today. We want to apologize for the technical difficulties in the beginning. Hopefully, if you're listening to this show later on and not live, you stayed with us for the opening, for a little bit of that dead air in the beginning. May 16th, guitarist Brian Quinn from Candlebox will be joining us. We're going to talk to him about what's going on with Candlebox, future projects, what kind of concerts are coming up, if any at all, and going to bring up some good stuff, man. Want to hear Brian play a little bit of Far Behind, man, one day. So looking forward to that.
Love that. So I still love Candlebox. I know they are on the road right now. They're supporting a brand new album, and like I said before, Brian was a Philly guy with some bands here, Octane and Foster Child. Great guitarist, man. He's going on with some of the big boys now. That's exciting. I love Candlebox, and I like Brian, so I'm very excited for that show.
Great band, very underrated band, and I have to say, Kevin Martin is a very, very underrated singer. I think he has a great voice. I don't think he gets enough recognition, Kevin Martin.
No, not at all. And I got some pictures of Facebook. I met him a few years back, him and the guys from Live, also a good band. But, yeah, you mentioned the name Kevin Martin. People are like, well, yeah. I'm like, well, not well, yeah. Listen to the guy sing and meet him in person and watch him live. He's a phenomenal singer. The guy's got an incredible voice, and he's carried that band. Like I said, Brian's in there now. They changed around a few band members, but they're still going strong. New album, and I love those guys. So I'm dying to hear what's going on with them.
Yeah. They were at Salisbury Theater just this February, I believe. I was thinking about going to see them, and then never got to do it. I think they were doing a whole acoustic set.
Yeah, they had. Right? They did the acoustic set. They did a show in Philly a few years back at the TLA. Just still a great band, man. They're holding their own. Not as big maybe as they were in the 90s, but a band worth seeing. Get out there. I mean, their tickets are usually reasonable, and it's a great show. A lot of songs you'll say, oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Yep, very, very nice, very nice. All right, man, so great show tonight. We want to thank our guest, Danny Boy O'Connor, from the iconic hip-hop group House of Pain, for stopping by and talking to us about his campaign, his vision, and all his hard work to save the Curtis Brothers house from the Outsiders movie. And you can check that out at facebook.com/theoutsidershouse. And if you want to contribute and help out to a very, very historic house from a legendary movie, you can go to GoFundMe.com/TheOutsidersHouse. We'll have those links up on our Facebook and Twitter. If not tonight, definitely early tomorrow. once again, thanks, Danny, for stopping by, you know, taking the time out of his busy schedule. I know he's hanging out in my old stomping grounds in New York City right now, so can't thank him enough for doing that. Also, Brian Quinn, guitarist from the amazing band Candlebox, will be joining us on May 16th. And we have some other guests to announce, so stay tuned. Monday night coming up. We don't have a guest just yet, but that always changes here at the Stoop because we're always reaching out to some of the best people we can get. Really excited for some of the guests that we are going to be announcing real soon, Jeff. I told you one tonight while we were on the show live in your Facebook, and I know this is a person you're a big fan of.
Love this person. Not going to say what or who. Love this person. Also try reaching out to them before, and the fact that you have this person coming on really excites me. I'm so excited. I think it's outstanding.
Yeah, and she was so sweet to me talking to her tonight. Really, really, really. Well, there's a hint. She's a female. Can you guess? really, really
not,
cool girl.
It's not Mia Khalifa.
Yeah, no. And once we announce her, you'd be like, you'll say probably who, because she hasn't been around for a little bit. But once we start naming some of the movies and TV shows she was in, you'll know her right away. She was a she was a big part of the mid to late 80s and into the early 90s. Can't wait to announce that. We're just working on some dates with her, and hopefully we'll have a date tomorrow. We can announce it either on our Facebook page during the week, or we'll wait till Monday on our show. So once again, thanks, Danny Boy from House of Pain, for joining us tonight. You can join us next Monday. We will be back, guest or no guest. So for Jeff the Shark Perini, I'm Jonathan Ragus. You all have a great, great night.
Good night, everybody.